Here we are. So
yes, we're here.
Let's see if this works. So it's recording me. This will be a new chapter in Scary Dad lore. We'll see if this actually works. Because I'm not able to record both sides at the same time. We're just gonna go with it. See how it goes.
Yeah, we'll get through it. It'll be an experimental phase in our career. We'll see how it works.
So I think we can probably guess. We should probably only do one episode so we don't waste two if this one doesn't work.
Okay.
All right. So this is going to be episode 119, Return of the Fly, because we've been talking about the fly for like months. I don't even know if it's really fresh anymore, but this is a fresh eyes episode on the fly.
I watched it yesterday. So.
Okay. So you can remind me of the stuff, because I watched it just a little bit before Thanksgiving, I think. So it's not 100% fresh. It's kind of got some mold on it, but it's still good. So how you been?
Not too bad, man. I've been busy with work and other things. And starting off 2019, man. Just trying to remember to write down a 9 instead of an 8 right now.
Well, by the time this episode comes out, it's going to be probably a little bit old hat, but did you see all the stuff that happened today?
Regarding, oh yes, yes, the big sci-fi.com article.
Dude.
No.
It was
pretty awesome.
That's one of those things that, man, it was like, okay, yeah, I'll talk to you for your little blog about whatever you want to talk about, you know? And, I'm not being in any way like, sarcastic or whatever, but just somebody was like, oh hey, I'm doing a little blog on independent local cons. It's like, sure, send me some questions, we'll talk. And I come to find out it's sci-fi TV, the Sci-Fi Wire. I was like, I did not know that I was talking to you whenever I was talking to you. I wouldn't have answered anything differently. I mean, it was all good and everything was very positive and fun, but
we've gotten some great feedback on it on Facebook, so
yeah.
That's a positive.
So, full steam ahead into year 3. I think we're going to entitle this one 3D, because that's how all the cool part 3s actually land. To quote Jaws 3, the third dimension is terror. but yeah, we'll be starting to work on that one here pretty soon to get part 3 really kicking. I did listen to your daughter's Sirenicide episode. Make big props on that.
Oh yeah, she did. Considering it was her first time ever doing such a thing, and she did pretty good with it. I was excited.
Dude, she sounded a lot older and quite a bit more experienced than first time ever.
Right.
She sounded like she knew what she was doing. She kind of embodied the character pretty well. So.
And of course, she was her own worst critic. She was she was kind of unhappy with her performance. But I told her, "Said, well, just look at what you didn't like about it and change that for next time."
Mm-hmm. It was really good. So she got nothing to worry about. And first time, she was really good. So she can only get better.
Right.
So let's see. Should we introduce Mr. Gomez?
First, the old business.
We're not stopping the tape.
Yeah,
we're gonna
no,
cut
no.
this out. So,
okay.
Mr. Gomez just said hi, and here we are. So, we got some somewhat interesting old business today. On this date, did I even mention this is episode 119?
So yeah, yes, you did.
Okay,
you brought that up.
Cool. I'm gonna bring it again. 119. It's January 21st, 2019, and on this date in history, 1535, following the affair of the placards. Now, before I finish what the affair of the placards really was, at this point in the game, I don't know if the government's still shut down, but I do know a whole lot of people are pissed.
Yeah, my son is one of them because he's having issues with his student loans.
Oh, I ordered something a couple of weeks ago. I ordered something back in November, not realizing that it was in Russia. And then the guy, like, sent me a message via eBay. And he's like, I don't know what's wrong. It's stuck at customs and they won't let it through. I'm like, don't worry about it, bro. It'll show up when it shows up. But just, this is the world we live in, where you can go online in the world, in you know, this is not a pro or against politician sort of creed. This is just the world you live in, where if you don't like something that's going on, you go on to Twitter and you post a picture of an orange baby and make fun of the president, which is essentially the world leader, right? You can say, I don't like that guy. Or you can say, I like that guy. Fair enough. Following the affair of the placards, French Protestants are burned at the stake in front of Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 1535.
Damn.
So what's the affair of the placards? A bunch of Protestants put up basically signs criticizing the Catholic priests and like the church leaders. The placards are literal signs. These guys walked around putting up signs in public squares being like, that guy sucks. And that guy gathered them up and set them on fire.
Old school Twitter.
Old school Twitter. So, but that guy's like, hey, you know what? You sent a bad tweet about me. I'm setting you on fire, literally, right out in front of the church. Done.
That's pretty damn rough. Could you imagine something like that happening today?
Well, first of all, no, you couldn't do it. But second of all, there would be a shitload of people burning. Because everybody's got something bad to say about the government. Everybody. About
something, yeah.
So, yeah.
The government has bad stuff to say about itself, you know?
Yeah. So, just think, you know, you go walk around with a piece of paper that said, that guy sucks. And they find out you did it, and they set you on fire in the church courtyard. Okay. Today I was looking over some of my stories that I've written and I've submitted to different publications, and they're too long for the word count. Long story short, I write my stories are too long. I'm wordy.
Okay, Greenlee.
Right. Okay. But how's this for something? On this date in 1789, the first American novel is published in Boston. You want to know the title?
Shoot.
The Power of Sympathy, or The Triumph of Nature Founded in Truth. That's the title of the first novel published in America. The first American published novel. The Power of Sympathy, or The Triumph of Nature Founded in Truth, by William Hill Brown.
Well, you know it was number one on the bestseller novel list.
That day it was, for sure. Okay. Have you heard of this little thing called, like, the Women's March or the Me Too movement?
Yeah, I've read something about it somewhere.
Okay. So I think what they're trying to tell us is that women are just as good as men, right? That's what they're... That's, I think... And also, don't touch them if they don't want to be touched. I get it. But this isn't 1500, 16, 17, 18, 1900s. Well, it's 1908. New York City passes the Sullivan Ordinance, making it illegal for women, not men, but women, to smoke in public.
Scandalous.
And they're like, nope, you got to go inside. That's 1908, man. That's not too long ago. It was vetoed by the mayor, I guess, because he wanted to be reelected. But
women's suffrage hadn't hit yet, so women's vote didn't really matter at that time, did it?
Don't let them smoke, and they'll get more pissed.
Right? Their husbands have to deal with it, and they won't vote for you.
Sorry, ladies. This is just one of those things that pops out of history. You're like, are you serious? Like, they didn't target everybody. It wasn't like we're going to pass an ordinance that says nobody can smoke. It's literally...
Oh, God, there's somebody in the room.
Oh, You scared me, babe.
Sorry.
Can I have one?
Yeah.
Okay. On this date in 1954, the first nuclear... First nuclear-powered submarine. Either ironically or serendipitously named the USS Nautilus was launched. And on this date in 1981, production of the DeLorean DMC-12 begins.
Very exciting. I was actually watching a little one of those Saturday television shows. It's like three-part documentary thing. They do different subjects. One of them was about the DeLorean festival they have every year, which is, I don't know if you knew that was a thing, but it is a thing.
Well, it's after Back to the Future, because the DeLorean didn't sell well. And that's I think, what got DeLorean fired from GMC. But I didn't realize that the DeLorean DMC was actually the name of the car. I thought it was a GMC DeLorean because that's what it looks like on the front.
Okay, yeah.
Nope. I don't even know if GMC actually made the DeLorean, but it's...
I don't think they did.
No, they made it in Ireland.
Independent, yeah.
Because John DeLorean was too much on cocaine and he couldn't hold a job with... We've mentioned him on New Business or Old Business before.
Yes, we have.
He got busted with like half a pound of coke and a bunch of whores in one of his cars. And he's like, hi, I'm the executive director of a giant car corporation. Okay. Notable births. What would you give to have this name? On this date in 1801, John Batman was born.
So he didn't pronounce it that way. The emphasis was probably on man. Batman.
Perhaps. I clicked on the link. He was not very interesting. But he had the cool name. But he's John Batman, so I have to mention him on the show. In 1922, a mere 21 years after John Batman was born, or 120 years, Telly Savalas.
Mr. Cool himself, Kojak.
1924, Mr. Benny Hill. I was like, what did Benny Hill do? I can only remember the song.
The song, and that's it.
In 1935, Mr. Wolfgang Jack. And I'm going to use the word again because it's on...
You do realize your Wolfman Jack impersonation wasn't too far off from your actual voice.
I know. Especially when I get excited, right? Hey! And I'm going to use the word serendipity again because it's important next week. Because I've already done next week's old business. But serendipitously... On this date in 1956, happy birthday to Gina Davis.
Look at that.
We couldn't have planned it better. Scott's like, I didn't watch it. Yeah, I didn't watch it. Yeah, I didn't watch it. Oh, I watched it. Hey, it happened to be
like his birthday.
It's Gina Davis' birthday. All right. Okay, on this date, notable deaths in 1950, pretty much the guy who designed the modern day government and media, Mr. George Orwell. That's pretty much it for the old business. So we're going to take a break. I don't know. Do you want to listen to Benny Hill?
On loop.
I don't know. We'll figure out something, but that might be it. 10 minutes.
It'll be a filler, you know.
All right. That's it.
Will everyone in the theater hold on firmly to his seat, please? Stop it! Stop it! I'm Vincent Price. What unearthly horror did that girl gaze upon? What manner of incredible thing walked beneath that hood? It would be unfair at this time to show you any more of what went on in that laboratory where a man actually dared to play God. So fantastic, words can't begin to describe it. You must see it with your own eyes to believe it. When the fly comes your way.
It isn't like any other fly I've ever seen.
No! Please, let me look at the fly! I've killed Andre. Please help me. Call the police and...
The charge can only be murder.
There were no mistresses. I had no lovers.
Why did you kill him?
God, don't let it get out.
Inspector, it's in the garden. Come quickly.
As God is my witness, I saw the thing. It's unbelievable. I shall never forget that scream as long as I live.
The fly is on its way. Watch out for it. It's far beyond anything your mind could ever conceive.
All right.
We're back. Mr. Goldman.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, so we've had some deaths, and we have some deaths that are actually going to be coming up here pretty soon. It's 2019 is starting off kind of depressing for a lot of us, for some of our pop culture icons from our day. Billy Connolly hasn't passed away yet, but he's deteriorating very quickly. You may know Billy Connolly as the dad of the two brothers in Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
So he is says he's not afraid of dying. He's pretty open about what he's going through right now, but he's suffering from Parkinson's disease. And he recently did a little docuseries on the BBC where he talks about that he doesn't have very much time left. He's 75 years old. Well, 76. At the time of the documentary, he was 75, but he's slipping away pretty quick, which is pretty sad. I love Boondock Saints, one of my favorite movies.
So. And it's funny because he's actually a comedian. Hey, real quick.
Yes.
I want to cut this out, but pause.
Okay.
Try not to touch your desk because
okay.
Your microphone's bumping. I can hear it. So, like, whenever you talk. Okay.
Okay. Cut. Alrighty, so we got that. And, of course, as you know, we lost Mean Gene Okerlund. Recently,
I know he was the big wrestling guy, but do you remember when he used to do like the commercials for Micro Machines? Because he just talked so fast, and he was
that's actually a different guy.
No, dude, he was on at least a couple of the original ones, wasn't he?
There was a different guy that did the Micro Machines stuff. Because I remember seeing him on Real People. Remember that show, Real People, that used to come on with what's his name, Byron Allen, and some other folks. They had the Micro Machines guy on there before. It's a different dude.
Okay, man, my
bad.
They
look alike. They have the same mustache in you. But you're suffering from a little Mandela effect, right? Right.
There. Must be.
But Mean Gene Okerlund has passed away at the age of 76. In his early days, he was he got the name Mean Gene from Jesse the Body Ventura, actually, whenever he first started doing interviews at the AWA. Which also included Bobby the Brain Heenan and Hulk Hogan. Okerlund might be the most recognized face of the WWF next to Hulk Hogan himself. I mean, everybody knew Mean Gene. Even in the cartoon they had with Captain Lou and the rest of the wrestlers, Mean Gene Okerlund was featured in that cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
So he definitely a sad day in the world of wrestling. And even sadder to me is the death of Bob Einstein. Super Dave Osborne himself. Now, I remember, I'm a little bit older than you, I know, but I remember being a kid and staying up late to watch Bizarre on Showtime. And the two things I loved about Bizarre the most, once you'd see boobies every once in a while, and two was the Super Dave Osborne clips, which were hilarious. That was long before the movie and everything else. It's Bizarre was a Canadian variety show. Kind of like Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be on there when I was a kid, back in the late 70s, early 80s, man. And of course, he also found success in, what was the show he was on? He was on Smothers Brothers, the Comedy Hour. He did a shoot with Dave Osborne through the 70s and into the 80s. And last but not least, he was big on the film, the show Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm. He's the father of Matt Damon's character. He's also the father of Matt Damon's character in Ocean's 13. Yeah, and Curb Your Enthusiasm was another big one that he was on also. So
he was definitely hilarious.
He was funny, man.
And the thing about Super Dave was even if you didn't watch his shows, they had little clips of Super Dave on other shows.
Yeah.
From time to time, where it'd just be like, you know, it's like, oh, here's Super Dave Osborne, and they like on Saturday Night Live on Tonight Show or something. And he'd go out there and just talk about what he's got going on. He's like, oh yeah, you know, I jumped a motorcycle, a bunch of trucks, and he just like this big massive crash, like Evel Knievel. And he's like, yeah, I did that yesterday. And he's sitting in the chair, like in his racing suit, like, yeah, it's cool.
Okay, a guy in Montana recently, 27-year-old, was out setting up some targets for target practice out in the woods and stuff, when all of a sudden he found himself under fire from someone nearby. When he confronted the man told him, I thought you were Bigfoot. The suspect also said, I don't target practice, but if I see something that looks like Bigfoot, I just shoot at it. So apparently, in the hills of Montana, there's a guy running around shooting anything that moves, just in case it might be Bigfoot. Guy has not been caught yet. His description of his vehicle has been given to the police, and they are trying to find him right now. They still haven't found the vehicle matching the description, but...
Like, I'm just Bigfoot. Like... I'm just out hunting Bigfoot. I'll just shoot it. Whatever. Anything is Bigfoot.
Okay, Oklahoma City, Taco Bell customers at the drive-thru. Got his food, parked his car, ran inside, and started complaining about not getting enough sauce. And he was pretty upset about that. When he found out that they were out of the particular sauce that he wanted, he pulled out a gun and opened fire in the restaurant, shooting out the windows before leaving, upset about his hot sauce. Just use the mild, dude.
Dude. I had a friend once that we worked together, and I show up to work and he's still all bent out of shape. He's all pissed. Like, what, dude, what's wrong, man? He's like, get this. Go to Jack in the Box last night, all drunk as fuck. All I want is two tacos, right? The 99-cent two tacos. And they've got that buttermilk ranch sauce. That's and I want buttermilk ranch sauce, and I ask him for the... He says, no. And I'm like, what the hell do you mean, no? You're not going to give me a thing of sauce. He said the guy in the Jack in the Box was like, buttermilk ranch sauce is not for tacos, and like closed the window on him. And he said it bummed him out the whole rest of the night, like, how the hell do you tell me no and then close the window on me that you can't have any buttermilk ranch sauce? And I'm like, actually, that's the funniest thing I've heard all day. Like, if I worked at Jack in the Box, I'd say the same thing. You're like, you're not going to put that on that.
Okay, have you seen the pictures that have been released of Elon Musk is an interesting character, to say the least. He has some interesting aspirations, and his delivery of his ideas are newsworthy, for sure. Have you seen the pictures he recently released of the new spacecraft that they're about to start testing for his SpaceX program?
Uh-uh.
Dude, this is no lie. It is a shiny, stainless steel-looking tube. It looks like an aircraft out of Buck Rogers. You got to find the pictures of it. There's no windows. It's just a solid piece of metal. It looks like a rocket like I would build to launch in the backyard with my kids. But this is the rocket that he plans on using for his they're about to do a test flight, but this is what's going to eventually take us to Mars.
Does it look like the Austin Powers one, just without the nuts?
Yeah. The test rocket itself won't be going through space. They'll be testing it with suborbital test flights. The actual orbital version is going to be taller, has thicker skins, but it's still going to have that smooth, curving shape and bright stainless steel looking body. Dude, you got to look at it. It's the weirdest looking thing. You look at it and think, dude, he must have been smoking a lot of weed when he came up with this plan. Smoking weed and watching, like I said, Buck Rogers or something like that.
You know he got in trouble for smoking weed, right?
Yeah, no, on Joe Rogan's show, I think it was. Yeah. He was doing that on.
He was smoking legal weed and just not even talking about anything serious, just being kind of like, yeah, I've got some really good ideas about the future. And like his board of directors were like, what are you doing? You can't even be a billionaire and not get in trouble these days.
The rocket is intended to be a key component of his plan to land on and one day colonize Mars. The plan is for the 100-passenger Starship to be blasted into space by SpaceX's upcoming Super Heavy rocket, which itself may take the first test flight later this year. The Starship will then land on Mars and take off and return to Earth. He says that he hopes to launch his Mars mission by early 2020s. So, next thing you know, we'll have Total Recall. Have you heard Bruce Campbell will be returning to television?
Yeah, he's going to be the host of
Ripley's Believe It or Not.
I was about to say he's going to be the host of one of the Scary Dad episodes. Actually, man, that's the one we did with Deadman's Tome right there.
Yeah. So yeah, it has been learned that Travel Channel's version of Ripley's Believe It or Not will be hosted by the man himself, Bruce Campbell. The most recent version they've had before this was hosted by Dean Cain, my doppelganger. You may recall it aired on TBS from 2000 to 2003, and it was canceled. So we'll see how Groovy Bruce does with that. He's no Jack Palance, but we shall see how that works out.
Well, Groovy Bruce could do Jack Palance if he was to just breathe while he talks. I remember when we were doing the Ripley's episode, and I was trying to find some clips. And if you watch it, and you watch Jack saying the words, he's like, hi, I'm Jack, and I'm saying things. But like whenever it was just cuts to straight audio, and you watch the little things move, It's like there's a little blurb, and then silence, and then a little blurb, and then silence, and then a little blurb. And you watch it, and it's like, hi, I'm Jack Palance, and we are going in to discuss this thing. And you're like, man, he really can draw out an intro. Like, like, man, that guy is like dramatic, but he's got you on the edge of the seat. Like, what's he gonna say?
Jack Palance is awesome, dude. City Slickers, he was just badass at City Slickers, man. He got his character. Alright, let's go over to California. Woman was recently jogging in a Bay Area park. Oops, went too far. She was in Anthony Chabot Regional Park in Castro Valley when a dog attacked her. She had to defend herself with pepper spray to get the dog away. A little while later, the woman came across the dog's owner, another lady, who tackled and punched her multiple times before biting her arm to the point where it bled and left this. It looks like a shark bite on her arm. So she wasn't bitten by the dog.
She's been the owner.
By the dog's owner. People are crazy. Okay, so did you do your due diligence and watch our the video that I sent you?
Yes.
Okay, what I love about the video the most are the accents. But just in case you weren't, did you read any articles or did you just watch the video?
I just watched the video.
Okay.
Which... it's one of those things where it's not as if it's surprising that there was something living up there, because even before the big reveal, they did need a little bit of maintenance in that general area.
Well, but, wait till you hear the full story, because you probably didn't realize that 27-year-old William Glenn Boast was in his underwear. Those weren't shorts. He was in a wife beater in his boxers. So anyway, Tuscumbia, Alabama. 27-year-old from Birmingham, Alabama, Wesley Glenn Boast fell through the ceiling at a Waffle House on a Sunday morning. And just so you know, the reason people were filming is because somebody noticed the ceiling was buckling. And there was something moving up there. So they started filming to try to see, because they wanted to know what the hell it was that was going on with the ceiling. So in a Waffle House in Tuscumbia, Alabama, 27-year-old went into, Mr. Bose went into the bathroom, locked himself in the bathroom, took off his jeans, tied one end around the door handle, the other end around the toilet to keep people from being able to open the door. At which point he decided he was going to go into the ceiling, crawl across the restaurant, Die Hard style, drop into the office, take the money from the safe, climb back up in the ceiling, go back to the bathroom where he's going to put his pants back on, and then walk out of the Waffle House. That was the master plan. Needless to say, it did not work very well for Mr. Boast.
No.
In the middle of everybody's dining, he fell through the ceiling, immediately accosting one of the customers as they tried to stop him from fleeing, and everybody's cell phones were out, a la WorldStar.com, WorldStarHipHop.com, and they were filming. And when he fell through the ceiling, all the insulation and stuff fell on top of the table, and the waitresses started screaming, using double negatives and horrible language. It is a fascinating video, to say the least. The Alabama accents were so thick, they sounded fake.
Dude, when you say... The motherfucker fell out the ceiling on Sunday morning, and you accused him of using double negatives. That is the best part ever. Don't do that!
Oh,
you're grammar Nazi there, man.
So yeah, so it's a great video. If you get a chance, try to check that bad boy out. And that's all I have for new business on this episode.
Awesome. We'll take a break and be right back.
I think you're making a mistake. I think you really want to talk to me.
Sorry, I have three other interviews to do before this party's over.
Yeah, but they're not working on something that'll change the world as we know it.
They say they are.
Yeah, but they're lying.
There is a limit, even to the imagination.
Human teleportation, molecular decimation, breakdown, and reformation is inherently purging.
Where our greatest creations meet our deepest fears.
Something went wrong, Seth. When you went through, something went wrong.
You are about to go beyond that limit.
Those weird hairs that were growing out of your back, I had them analyzed. But they were definitely not human.
If you saw how scared and angry and desperate he is...
I'm sure Typhoid Mary was a very nice person, too, when you saw her socially.
No!
You're afraid to be destroyed and recreated, aren't you?
You're changing, Seth. Everything about you is changing.
Oh, no. What's happening to me? Am I dying?
I want to know what's going on.
What does the disease want?
It wants to turn me into something else.
Oh, no.
A fly got into the transmitter pod with me that first time when I was alone.
Don't go back to it.
It could be contagious.
I'm afraid!
Don't be afraid!
No. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Help me. Please, help me.
And we're back.
Yes, we are.
So what did you think of the fly?
Well, I was going to throw out a couple of facts that I recently discovered about the fly that I didn't know before. Were you aware that Mel Brooks is actually a producer?
I was not.
Mel Brooks is apparently a big horror fan, and he was approached and offered. He also helped produce The Elephant Man, David Lynch's Elephant Man, and he collaborated with that with a guy named Stuart Cornfield, and Stuart is the one that got with Brooks, and Brooks is the one that encouraged Cronenberg to actually direct the movie.
Oh, wow.
And Brooks told him to take the movie as far as he wanted. The quote, "I want you to go all the way, let yourself go, and don't hold back. There are no restraints." Another thing about Mel Brooks with this movie, you know the line where Gina Davis tells the girl, "Be afraid, be very afraid"?
Uh-huh.
Mel Brooks penned that line.
It's funny.
Pretty neat little trivia there, man.
That is very cool. It's interesting because I was talking to Ricky about this right before we recorded the episode a couple weeks ago, of how we were talking about doing a Fresh Eyes on the Fly and how he had his house wax and, you know, they had their commentary podcasts about movies and stuff, and how there's certain movies and certain things that you just, they're just part of your psyche. They just are in your brain, right? And I use the example of RoboCop and The Fly, because at the time of RoboCop and The Fly, Hollywood, or at least Verhoeven and Cronenberg, had an obsession with things getting melted, right? Like, and before, we're not even talking about movie commentary, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Right,
like,
right.
And as a kid, because I think it was like 1984, 1985, like, that's when this was happening, so I was like 9, 10, 11 years old. It was like, oh my God, nasty, right? But the be afraid, be very afraid. Okay, so I'm going to go way off script for a second, but you've seen the 40-year-old version.
Yeah.
And Knocked Up, right? But 40-year-old Virgin is probably the right one. And you remember Paul Rudd's wife, the blonde girl with the blue eyes. She's pretty, she's cute, and she's you know, she's real good at playing a bitch, but she's also just kind of real good at just and Knocked Up is probably primarily the one that she's in.
Yeah,
like they're friends. She's an actress that I'm always like, man, I know her from somewhere. I know her from somewhere. And the reality is I know her from a lot of things. I just named off three movies that she's in, but it's always, no, that's not right. That's not what I'm talking about. I know her from somewhere, and the somewhere that you keep saying is not the somewhere that I know her from. It took a long time, but the somewhere I knew her from was from Big Daddy, the Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
She was the ex-girlfriend that was working at Hooters.
Okay.
Right? And you're like, okay, where is he going with this? This is like a super minor role. Where is he going? That's the first time I ever saw her. She made an impression, and then after that, anything else she was in, I was reminded of her because of that particular role. Be afraid. Be very afraid. It's on T-shirts.
Right.
It's on enamel pins.
It's probably on, one of the most well-known lines from the movie.
When it comes to, well, not from the movie, from horror in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
That line could easily be used for just about, it's a perfect tagline for just about any movie, like In Space, No One Can Hear You Scream. Perfect, fine. But now you're making a space movie. Like, that line doesn't work for a submarine movie, which is what Alien essentially could be if it was just in water instead of space, right? Be afraid. Be very afraid. Perfect for all horror movies. And I would hear that line, I'd be like, dude, I know it. Where did that come from? Where's that from? Where's it from? I've heard it. Well, of course, I've heard it everywhere. Everybody uses it all the time. Where's it from? Fresh Eyes, rewatching The Fly, and when she says it, it was like getting shot. It was like, boom! Holy shit! It's Gina Davis.
Right, and that's what I saw. It's a quote that many people have heard, but not everyone knows comes from The Fly. And Cronenberg revealed that the iconic line was invented by Mel Brooks while discussing how characters should react to the early stages of Seth Brundle's transformation. And that's when Mel Brooks came up with the line for Gina Davis at that point, which is, I thought that was awesome. It's pretty neat to know. Because when you think of Mel Brooks, you don't think of, you know, quintessential horror lines. You know, you think of Blazing Saddles, you know.
Or Spaceballs, for sure.
Right, right. David Cronenberg was almost not the director. They wanted him for the project originally, but he was in the middle of working on Total Recall. So they hired a guy named Robert Bierman to make the film, and all of a sudden he had a family tragedy, and he asked to withdraw from the film. And when that happened, they found out that Cronenberg had just finished up Total Recall. So because this guy having his family tragedy is the reason Cronenberg came back, and they quickly came up with a deal and got him back on board.
Wow.
The reason Gina Davis is in that movie is because at the time he was dating, she was dating Jeff Goldblum.
Mm-hmm.
And he campaigned for her to be added to the movie, because up to then, Fletch came out before The Fly, I believe. I remember her from Fletch and a couple other small roles, but she was a relatively unknown actress at that time.
After that one, she goes in Beetlejuice.
Yep.
And Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis are extremely tall, so they work really well together on the screen. They were married for a really long time.
Yeah. And last but not least, apparently when the movie first came out, they screened it for test audiences, and they realized that it was too gory, and they actually removed some of the worst scenes from the movie. One of the ones I thought was interesting is, you know when the guy loses his leg? From the burn of fly, he vomits and his leg burns up. Later on, he actually took the foot and ate it.
Wow.
Yeah. And then another one, they had a scene where, this is apparently on a special edition DVD, but the Brundlefly created a hybrid animal between a baboon and a cat that escaped from one of the pods, and he had to chase it down and kill it with a lead pipe, which was, that's on a special edition DVD scene. Now, one thing that I'm going to close out with this one, which I think is awesome. Did you know Cronenberg has a cameo in the movie?
No.
Cronenberg is the gynecologist giving birth during the dream sequence.
Oh, crap. Yeah, you're right.
That's awesome. I didn't realize that either.
When she gives birth to the maggot?
Yes. Which is one of my favorite scenes of the movie. That movie just trips you out when that happens, because the dream sequence is so unexpected, you think it's part of the movie.
Yes.
There's no way you would think it's a dream sequence when it's happening until she finally wakes up.
Yeah, because she straight up just says, hey, this is what's going on. And then the next thing you know, she's having the baby, and you're like, oh, crap, what is this going to be?
Right. Well, when the doctor says there's more in there, she's like, oh, my God, what's happening? But that's all my little fun facts that I had that I thought I'd share.
The thing that struck me as craziest about The Fly was exactly how gory it was.
It was intensely gory. And you know, what's weird is when the movie opens up, it opens up to that dramatic, just really dark music that you know something's bad fixing to happen. And it's weird how it starts off with that just vibe with the loud horns and everything, and then it goes to a dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird how, so you know something bad is going to come, because they wouldn't play that kind of music if it wasn't going to get really, really dreary. But then it goes to a dinner party with this nerdy scientist chatting up this reporter.
Which is a little unbelievable, because she's hot and he's a nerd.
Yeah.
And he's just like, hey, want to come back to my place and see all my cool stuff? And you're just like, But she went.
But she was just looking for a story.
She still went.
Yeah.
Still that's a little unbelievable.
But yeah, the movie is exceptionally gory, and the special effects, the deterioration of Seth Brundle, the way they did the makeup, it looks like whenever he starts changing and he runs Gina Davis off, and then when he calls her to come back to come check on him, it looks like a different actor. It doesn't even look like it's Jeff Goldblum anymore. The visual effects, the special effects are so well done. He looks gaunt, he looks skinnier, it looks like a totally different person.
Well, that's one of those things is for the de-evolution of the human. So, even before that, whenever he's throwing baboons in there, and the formulas are not right, and the baboons are just like these throbbing gristle on the floor of his little thing.
Yeah, they turned inside out, pretty much.
And so then instead of being like, man, this is a messed up experiment, all he does is hose out the thing and throw another baboon in there.
Right.
And you see the looks on these poor monkeys' faces as he's like, okay, well, it's your turn. And they're like, oh, no. But whenever he goes in there and he fuses with the fly, before he realizes that he's fused with the fly, and he just starts getting stronger, and he doesn't understand what's going on. And for that brief moment, whenever you haven't seen the movie, if you haven't seen the movie ever, or if you haven't seen it in a while, there's that brief moment of where it looks as if he's actually going to take on the positive traits of the fly.
He's going to be a superhero. He's going to be a superhero, pretty much.
Right. So he's got enhanced sight and hearing.
Strength.
He's got the strength, the dexterity, the acrobatics and stuff. His mind's working at 100 miles a minute. He's just kind of buzzing around like a fly. Like, okay. And then it just takes the dark turn.
Like, well, it first starts taking the dark turn. One, his personality. And you can see where his face starts getting abrasions. You can just mm-hmm. see his actual skin is starting to deteriorate.
Right.
What I love about his ability to personify a fly, when you're watching him when he first starts, really on the early onset of his change, he starts speaking fast. He starts twitching. He's the personification of a fly. He's what you would expect a fly to act like. If a princess would kiss a fly, it would turn into a prince.
Right.
You know, it's so well done by him.
Oh, Jeff Goldblum's an incredible actor.
Oh yeah.
No lie. He's
able to say so many things just with his eye movements in that movie. That's all it takes. His mood changes with the snap of a finger with his eyes.
And then he begins to change.
Yeah.
And then whenever he changes, He gets mean, but she leaves. She goes home. She's like, oh, my, you know, okay, this dude's an asshole now. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I'm out. I'm going to go back to my old boyfriend and just chill at the house and forget about this nerd that I hung out with. Then when he goes back, when he calls her back, and she goes back, and he just, like, throws up over his chin.
Yeah. He grabs some food. He's going to eat it. So he goes and throws up on it. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. That's disgusting.
He's like, oh, that's disgusting. His fingernails are coming off. His teeth are falling out. His ear falls off while he's talking to her. Yeah, while he's talking to her. And he's got hair and pus and weirdness. And he's literally twitching around. He's no longer talking like a fast human. He's twitching around like a messed up creature that's being overtaken. It's kind of like a demon possession almost. Right. But the thing that got me is precisely exact, you know, just how gory it really is. Whenever he starts going off.
Oh, yeah.
And what's messed up, too, is her boyfriend, like her ex-boyfriend, the jerk that's, like, sexually harassing her and smacking her ass every time she walks by, he's the hero of the book.
Well, that's what I was going to mention also. Watching the movie this time, I realized it gets to a point where he becomes a sympathetic character. You start rooting for him.
Yeah.
You know, he becomes the guy that she has to lean on because Seth Brundle has changed so much.
Well, then of course, even though the dude's a douche, he doesn't deserve to have his arm melted right. off by acid or his leg. And even after he's gotten his arm and leg melted off by acid, by stomach acid, mind you, he still manages to shoot the fly. Like, he right. still manages to save the day. He's certainly not the hero. She's the hero in things, but... And I'm sorry, dude. I'm a big fan of Love Conquers All, but if that thing is crawling after me, That shotgun would have gone off like a few times. Like, she did it as an ultra last resort. It's like, no, what are you doing, man?
Like, it was just in this.
Poor guy, man. Because, like, he was Brundlefly, but then he went through the thing again and crawled out of it. He was like Super Duper Fly.
Yeah.
And still in there.
Right.
Like, kill this guy. Let him out. For me, the effects, even though it's mostly probably just milk, those, I remember seeing that movie when I was like 10, 11 years old. It was not as effective as it was when I was grown. I don't know why. If maybe it was because of RoboCop, maybe it's because I was desensitized a little bit. Watching it again, I was like, oh man.
It's gross, man. When he breaks that guy's arm when they're arm wrestling.
Yeah, an arm wrestling, dude.
Every time I see it, it just makes you wince. As many times as I have seen that scene, it gets me every time.
And that was one of those things, like I said, okay, she goes and stays, she hangs out with the nerd, and he's got his tie, and he's like tall and skinny, and he's like, yeah, I'm working on something cool, you want to come over and see? And then, like, he gets a little bit of strength, and the first thing he does is, like, go find a redneck to beat his ass. And, like, fuck up his day. He's like, oh, I'm gonna just rip your arm off. Boom! It's like, because, I mean, the redneck was a dick, but he didn't deserve that. Well, that dude's going to lose his arm after that hard of a break.
Right.
They're not going to reattach that. And, like, he'll be in rehab for months, especially in the 80s. Like, Brundlefly just ripped his arm off for no good reason other than he was pissed.
The skin, dude. But for me, the just watching this movie and watching the transformation, because he starts off as a nerdy guy, and then he becomes very aggressive with his new strength. And then he gets scared. And after fear, he just kind of accepts what he is, and he wants to learn more about it. It's so weird to watch the transformation of him, the way he goes. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, at that point he starts trying to log, you know, his changes as far as how he has to eat and different things. And he gets just a surreal calm about being the fly. So he's accepted the fact that I am now going to be a fly, and I'm going to try to use this to teach the world. And what sets him off? She gets pregnant, and she tries to get rid of the baby. And I think I don't think it was a paternal instinct that he had. He wanted that part of the experiment to come to fruition. It was the scientist in him that wanted to see what would happen with the mixing of the DNA in that way. What are your thoughts on that? Like I said, I don't think it was a paternal instinct. I think he just actually wanted his experiment to continue.
I would have to say, I hadn't really thought about it like that. I hadn't thought about it that far. But now that you point it out, I don't know that Cronenberg or Davis or Goldblum or anybody else would actually admit this, but she wanted to have an abortion because she thought the baby might be messed up. Nature doesn't like that.
Right.
Nature protects. Nature says put your DNA forward and protect it by any means necessary.
Right.
So as the fly, he wasn't going to allow his brood to be killed.
Right.
So for him, it was a more innate drive to prevent her from
stopping his line.
From stop. Well, and again, not Brundle, not the fly, or even Seth Brundle, but the Brundlefly. The fly instinct is protect at all costs. You know, speed that up as fast as you need to where it's in fly language, but protect at all costs. Once he found out that there was brood and it needed to be protected, then in his mind, that was all there was.
Right.
So he needed to bring her back and he needed to hold her down until the brood was protected.
Right.
So it wasn't like seeing the experiment through. That might have been what was in his human brain.
Uh-huh.
In the fly brain was, this is new us, and this is our new line. We're the next step. Make it happen.
Which, if you saw the Fly Part 2, it did happen.
Yes. Well, and they say that, mothers are affected by the DNAs of the fathers. Like, so you have individual male, individual female, they mate. Even if they separate completely, the DNA of the male is still inside of the offspring, and that offspring develops inside of the female. She absorbs that DNA and becomes part of the partner. So it's out there, but it works. It's true.
Right.
So why wouldn't you make 100% sure that your box is clean before you do this thing? Because even the computer was like, yo, bro, there's something else in here. And he's like, keep going.
Yeah, don't stop. Yeah, you would think you would make sure that'd be the first thing that you would check. You know, that nothing else was in there.
I'd get some alcohol wipes and be like, there's no viruses, no worms. Because the fly is one thing. There's all kinds of stuff you can imagine could have been in there.
Oh, yeah.
You can just fuse with a giant virus. You know? You just look like you and everything's normal, but then just a giant polyp pops out the side of you and, like, absorbs everything around you.
But yeah, all in all, it's a great movie. Its special effects are great. The acting, of course, is phenomenal. Jeff Goldblum just blew it away.
There needs be no remake of this movie.
No. It is a remake. It is a remake, but it was a very well done remake.
It was a remake itself. But they don't need to make it again.
No.
This is one for the ages. Because even the special effects, dude, that is gross.
Oh, yeah.
In a world of CGI and weirdness, that movie is messed up, dude.
To make it look so realistic, for him to just be sitting there that his ear falls off. You know, he's got the pencil in his mouth, and he goes to pull the pencil out, and all his teeth come out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's classic practical effects that work really, really well. And the makeup effects are, like I said, it looks like a different actor that's there at one point. It can't be touched.
So what do you think? Two thumbs up?
Oh, yeah, definitely, by far. It's been a two thumbs up movie for me for a long time.
For me, the fresh eyes aspect of it was, I don't remember it. I remember watching it a lot. I don't remember it being as gross as it was. And I think, again, it might have been overshadowed by RoboCop, which was same time. Like, there was a lot of weird stuff going on in the 80s. So, of course, it was just kind of in there. Right. But The Fly standing alone, it's body horror to the extreme. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah.
The people who made, was it Human Caterpillar or whatever, Human Centipede, they could only wish they could make a movie as good as The Fly.
It's great. It's a great, great film. And one of the things I noticed about it this time, it's like I told you before, that I find myself starting to pay more attention to the sound effects of movies as far as the music, the lack of sound, just everything. White noises, background stuff. And it's like I mentioned, the beginning of the film, it has this ominous music that comes on where, you know, you're thinking this is going to be scary, you know, something bad is about to happen. And then it gets real lighthearted. And then it goes through again, and you know, you see the first monkey dying, and then he starts trying to figure out, you know, how can I change this? So they cook the steak, and when he realizes after eating the steak, it's this upbeat music that makes you think this movie's taking a turn where it's going to be happy and all this other stuff. And then when he first starts seeing the negative effects of the change, the music from the beginning of the movie comes back, and you realize it's about to get scary. This is where shit is about to go down, and it just... The ability of a director to use music in that way to change your feeling and your perception, I have so much respect for that shit now, man. And like I said, that's one of the main things that I noticed.
See, I didn't really notice the music as much. I did notice, like you say, kind of the positives mm-hmm. of the... You know you're watching a horror movie. You know it's going to go bad. And you also know how long it is. It's an hour and a half long. And you're like 30 minutes in, so you've got an hour left. So you know within the next hour, things are about to go real sour.
Right.
But whenever he starts spinning around on the bar... Whenever he's like super smart and positive and like healthy and happy and you, it's not that you don't know that things are about to go bad, but you almost feel like they should. Like, oh yeah. Man, this is awesome. Like, just cut it now. Turn him into a superhero. He's Spider-Man. Let him fly. And that, like, that uplift before the drop, I think it's masterful because it, as many times as you've seen this movie before, you know it's going to go bad.
You know the dread's coming.
But they don't even focus on the nasty. They just focus on all of it, like so that you feel that good. You feel that upswing. You feel the happiness. Mm-hmm. Like, oh man, look at me! I turned into a superhero. No, you turn into a supervillain. And don't even realize it, man. Sorry. Again, this is Jeff Goldblum at his best.
Oh, by far.
Absolutely. I mean, was it Independence Day? Is still like, that's almost 10 years away. Jurassic Park is just a few years down the line, but... The Fly is probably Jeff Goldblum's magnum opus.
In my opinion, it definitely is. Because it shows his range, and it features him so well. Just from comedic to horror to dramatic, you get the full Monty there with Jeff Goldblum.
So what do you say? We've done a Fresh Eyes. We're hitting about the hour episode. You want to call it a night?
Yeah, we can. But one thing I want to... We're stopped. We're done.
Are we?
No. I was going to bring up... What do you think about the Lee Majors announcement?
That's pretty badass.
That's pretty awesome, dude. I was pretty excited about Lee Majors for sure. Other thing I wanted to ask you, have you watched Happy yet on Netflix?
I haven't. I haven't had a chance to.
It's a pretty... I'm looking forward to season two. Now, I don't know how big of a fan of Patton Oswalt you are. I know some people don't care for Patton too much anymore because he's decided to dip himself into politics a little bit too much. But Patton Oswalt is hilarious in this movie, dude. This series. But it is funny. It's a sci-fi series, so we got to show some love.
Dude, the God's honest truth is I do not dabble politics. I don't care about politics. Like, be on one side or the other. I followed Patton on Twitter, and my whole Twitter feed was full of him being like, and this is even before Trump, he's like, "No, Pat, this is an average Patton Oswalt tweet. Racist, sexist, yeah. Racist, sexist. Everything sucks. Racist, sexist." That's before his wife died.
And after his wife died, he got worse.
And then after his wife died, he got worse. I'm just like, bro, like, I've seen your stand-up. You're hilarious.
Yeah.
You have to have more than two words in your repertoire.
Stick with what works. You know, what people love you for, you know?
Right. And like, have your views, have your opinions, do like, advocate, you know, protest, whatever. But you got to have more than two words in your repertoire. And racist, sexist, just... I get it, bro. I get it. You're angry. Go be angry over there. Be funny over here, though. That's why I'm buying tickets for your shit. And he'd probably, like, because he's really good at slamming hecklers. Yeah. He'd probably have his field day with me. But that's me. I'm just like, you're funny, but you're not funny right now.
Give me the funny.
So go away. So, but yeah, I'll have to check it out. If he's being funny...
His character in it is pretty funny. He does voice acting in it. It's when I first read the synopsis of Happy, I was like, "What in the hell am I getting myself into?" But it's very bloody. It's very dark. It's a cool ass show.
Cool.
Definitely. I recommend it. Not one you're going to watch with the kids.
I can't watch anything with the kids. My kids like watching those YouTube videos of kids opening toys. I don't get it. I'm like, dude, you have toys. those kids are playing with theirs. I'm like, well, go play with yours.
These YouTube channels and stuff like that. I was asking my daughter the other day. Some YouTube channels she watches where it's a guy that's with a British accent that's kind of doing stand-up, but not really. But that's pretty much what it is. But he's not actually on camera. It's some kind of cheap computer animation that he does where he does the voiceover for it. And this guy has like 1.5 million views. I just don't understand it. It's Where have we gone as a nation?
I know, right? We were watching The Fly. What were you watching? Man, I'm going to have to shut it down. We're at 1 hour and 5 minutes. That's about a good episode.
Yeah, without editing the Benny Hill loop for 12 minutes.
Well, the truth is, I don't know how well this is actually going to land. And I'm keeping this in the recording. I don't know how well this is going to land. I'm going to edit it as best I can. But what's probably going to end up happening is that one or the other of us is going to say something. And the other one's going to either laugh really, really too soon or really, really too late. Because they won't exactly be perfectly synced. But I'm going to do the best I can. This will be 119. And here's what's going to happen. Because The Fly is horrific. We're not going to re-record this. I don't roll that way. I'm going to get the raw data you send me. I'm going to cut it together as best I can. And if I can't cut it together good, I'm going to cut it together bad. And just run a Benny Hill behind it. In honor of Mr. Benny Hill. So, it's okay. One way or the other. What we're not going to do is try to record a second episode tonight. Because that would not work out well either way.
Yeah, we'll see what we got here, see what we need to fix for our timing and everything, and then we'll do the second episode, which is going to be a fun one. I had all kind of notes for that one, so.
Awesome. Well, with that, that has been, will be, and if Benny Hill's still playing, then might continue to be, episode 119, Scary Dad Podcast. Keep it scary, guys.
Later.